There was a certain wife who one day was out shopping, and she decided, was tempted to buy a very beautiful but very expensive dress, one that was way too expensive for the family's budget, but she decided to buy it anyway, and she brought it home, showed her husband, and he saw the receipt, and wide-eyed, he looked at her and said, "When you tried on the dress, why didn't you say, 'Satan, get behind me'?" And she said, "Well, I did, but he said it looks so good from behind as well." There was also a certain man who died one day and went to heaven, and he was enjoying himself in heaven, and one day he began to think about what was going on in hell, and he was curious about what kind of things were happening. So he decided to go to St. Peter at the Pearly Gate, and he said, "I'd like to see what is like down there, what is happening to those people." And St. Peter said, "Well, very well, you have permission for one day to go down and see what's happening." So he did. And as soon as he crossed the gate, Satan took him by the hand and began to show him an incredible, amazing time. And he had so much fun that he couldn't believe it. And at the end of the day, he went back to heaven and began to think about everything that he had seen down there. And the next weekend came, and he went to St. Peter and said, "You know, I really would like to go back down one more time just to make sure that I saw what I saw, and just to confirm." And St. Peter said, "Well, very well, you have permission for one more day to go back down to hell." And so he did, and again, Satan took him by the hand and showed him an even more amazing time than he had the last time. And again, at the end of the day, he went back to heaven and began to think and report how much fun he had, an amazing experience. And the next weekend came again, and he ran over to St. Peter right away and said, "Yeah, I'm ready to go down to hell." And St. Peter took a long, hard look at him and said, "You have permission, but be warned. If you go down again this time, it will be your last time." And the man took no heed of the warning and ran down to hell as fast as he could. And as soon as he crossed the gate, Satan snatched him up by the neck and took him down into the deepest, darkest, hottest dungeons in hell and left him there. And as Satan turned to leave, the man called out and said, "Why are you doing this to me? The last two times I came, you showed me such an amazing time. You know, why are you changed now?" And Satan turned around and said, "Well, of course. The last two times you were just a guest. Now you're a resident." So these two stories are completely fictitious and have nothing to do with biblical scripture. But because we know there's no temptation, there's no going to hell in heaven, but they do emphasize a point that I'd like to talk about today, and that is temptation. Temptation is hard, but it's not hard in the sense that the individual temptations are difficult, because Satan knows he has nothing to offer us that can compare with the wonders and glory of heaven. It's not the fact the individual's temptations themselves that are hard, it's more the fact that they are relentless. And I'm a human being, and I suffer the same problems that every human suffers. It's more the day after day, the month after month, and the year after year of Satan slowly tap, tap, tapping on that window. Like the drip of a faucet. That drip in itself is not really annoying, but if it happens over and over again, it can begin to wear on people and begin to break us down. But we know these temptations are not that difficult, because we have the Bible to tell us. We know in 1 Corinthians, this is everybody knows this, that God's not going to allow us to be tempted more than we can stand, and He'll always leave a way out for every temptation. And not only that, but He also says, if you resist Satan, he will flee from you. And he promises it. I have total faith, and I've seen this happen in my life. That's not the problem. The problem is, for me, is that when I do resist him, and I do pray, and he does flee from me, he always comes back. And Jesus himself had to deal with this problem. And Luke tells us, when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. And that part, really, I struggle with. Because whenever I resist Satan, I can always see him in my mind's eye as the Terminator, looking back at me through that window, saying, "I'll be back." And he does come back, and he says, "How about now? How about now? How about now?" And he will always keep coming back until the end. Well, there is a movie back in the 90s called The Shawshank Redemption. And there's a line in that movie that I always reflect on when I think about temptation. And the movie is about a man who was wrongfully accused of murder and thrown in prison for life. And he eventually escapes by digging through a concrete wall of the jail. And one of the lines in the movie is, "Geology is the study of pressure and time." And that's all it takes, really, pressure and time. The lead character in that movie was able to dig like a 2-foot diameter hole through solid concrete and rebar, 10 feet thick, in 16 years. And all it took was pressure and time. And we know from the parable of the sower, some people reject God completely. They never accept him. Some people accept God right away, but they fall away just as quickly. And other people, it takes time for the weeds of life to choke out their faith, and they give in. And all it really took for Satan was pressure and time. And that's what Satan knows. He knows that he's got time. He's got all your life to work on your weaknesses. And he never ends. But we know, too, that the reward only goes to those who are faithful to the end. There are many scriptures that tell us this. You must be faithful to the very end. You can't be faithful just for a year, just for 10 years, or 20. You have to be faithful to the end, which implies that if you have to be faithful to the end, then you're going to be tempted to the end. And how do we deal with that temptation? Because not all of us suffer the same temptations. I could go around this room and get 50 different recipes for 50 different favorite foods that you like to eat. I could also go around this room and get 50 different temptations for everybody's different weaknesses. Everybody succumbs to different temptations, and Satan knows them all. So it would be impossible for me to kind of go over every temptation here today in this one lesson about every single temptation, how to resist every one. But I don't think I need to, because from what I've seen, from what I've experienced, I think that every temptation has a root in one basic fundamental sin. Now, we know King James tells us in 1 Timothy, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." And I agree, but I prefer the New American Standard, the New King James Version. It says the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, because I don't think that money is the absolute center of every temptation. I think there is a deeper flaw in humanity, a deeper temptation that kind of covers all of them, and all is the source of all the temptations. And for you Lord of the Rings fans, it's kind of one sin or one temptation that rules them all. And so how do we get there? How do we look into that deeper root? I know this love of money is the root of all evil, but Satan didn't tempt Adam and Eve with money. There was none. So that left Satan with the problem. How do you tempt someone who doesn't know what money is? There's no gold or silver or riches. There's no lust or pornography. There wasn't any other people. There wasn't any greed because everything was provided for them. He didn't have to tempt them with bread because they had plenty of food. There was no envy. There was no strife. They were living in the Garden of Eden. They didn't even know what a lie was. So how do you tempt somebody who doesn't know any of these things? Well, he had to tempt them with the one thing he knew that humanity would want, because it was the one thing that he wanted. What they did know was God, and God had the power to decide what was good and what was evil, what was right and what was wrong. And what he tempted Adam and Eve with was the false hope of being able to make that decision for themselves, the full autonomy to say for themselves what is right and what is wrong. Because what was the first thing that Eve did when she, when Satan told her this lie? She saw that the fruit was good to eat, when in fact God told her that it was bad to eat. And that has been humanity's dilemma since this very moment. We constantly go through history with people trying to take what God says is good and say it's evil, and then taking what God says it's evil and making it good. It's happening now. And only he has the authority to say what is right and wrong. But we struggle with this. This whole Bible is so thick, I believe, because it is full of stories trying to teach us, trying to show us, this is what happens when you try to do it your own way. Look at all the stories that are in here. Of course, it's a story of love and how Jesus forgives us of that love and trying to bring us to him to show us, look, I'm trying to tell you the right way to do things. It's almost equivalent to being at dinner with your family. Like, if anybody has children, you can identify with this. A 5 or 6 year old leaning back at the dinner table and saying, well, you know, I've been through a year of kindergarten. I think I can make the rules around here now. I'm going to take over the finances. I'm going to decide what is right and wrong around here. So you guys just keep making your money and supporting me, and I'll make the decisions. It doesn't make any sense. We don't have the wisdom. We don't have the authority to decide for ourselves what is right and wrong. We have to have faith in God that he has made all the right decisions. And it plays out time and time again, not just in this Bible, but you read through history and you can see the mistakes people made when they try and make these decisions for themselves. As we go through the Bible, talking about all these different verses here, everybody is trying to switch it around, to try and say, well, I want to do it this way. I know what God says, but I'm going to do it my own way. So we know these verses. You are, back in Luke, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. Isaiah, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes. And Deuteronomy, everyone doing whatever is right in his own eyes. Because I believe that everybody justifies sin whenever they commit it. Either it's before the sin or after the sin. But even if it's for a split second, even if it's subconsciously, somehow we justify it in a moment of rage, in the heat of passion. How many times have you caught yourself saying, well, I need this, or I have to have this. This is how it's got to be. I deserve this, or this person deserves this. Even for a split second. And we know as Christians that many of us instantly realize we're wrong and we ask for forgiveness. But for many of the world, they say, no, I'm right. This is the way it's going to be. And I don't care what anyone says. But for Christians, we know that this is wrong. So why do we do this? Why do we have this flaw in us? I think it's because, really, we don't, as human beings, we don't like being told what to do. Even from an early age, when You know, they call it the terrible twos for a reason. Once children learn that word no, it kind of becomes hard to break. But we don't like it. Even my feathers bristle sometimes at work when my boss barks an order at me. Or a cop tells me, yeah, you go over there. Go. Move. And there's something about it that it rubs me the wrong way. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like as human beings, we kind of resent that. And why do we resent being told what to do? I think in part, it goes back to the fact that we are made in God's image. And being in God's image, we have some of His attributes. Now, I know that's a dangerous thing to say sometimes, so I'm going to clarify that, because people get nervous when you start talking about, I'm the image of God. People have taken it too far and said, well, I'm the image of God, I'm a child of God, therefore that makes me a God. That's not what I'm saying at all. And let me demonstrate. This is a 2022 Lamborghini Scion. It is an incredible piece of human engineering. I mean, it's mouthwatering. Maybe not to you, but I would long to have these drive one of these things. And it's got an 808 horsepower engine. It can go 220 miles per hour. I don't know when you'd ever use that, but it can do it. And it can accelerate from 0 to 62 in less than 3 seconds. Unfortunately, it costs $4 million, so I'll never own one, but it's still amazing. Now, this is also a Lamborghini Scion. This vehicle was made in the other one's image. It has some of the same characteristics. It's got an engine. It's only 0.25 horsepower. But it can't go 220. It can only go 3 miles per hour, and it can't reach 62 miles per hour. But if you could calculate its acceleration, it could get there in about 6 hours. So, and this is the only one I'd ever be able to afford because it costs $258. But you can see that this small vehicle is made in the other one's image. It has some of the same characteristics, but it is nowhere near on the same playing field. It is not even comparable by any standards that you can measure. They're not in the same world, not on the same class in any way, shape, or form. In the same way, we are made in God's image. So we have some of His characteristics He's given us, such as creativity, right? We can create. God is creative. He gave us creativity, and we create things, right? But that is way different than what God's creating out there. It's on a whole nother level. We can't even comprehend. He's making things out of nothing. I mean, we can only create from recombining things that we've already seen. Everything I've seen in my life has just been rearranging things that have already been done before. But God is making things from new. It's not even comparable. So too is the authority that He gives, that He blesses us with. Now, being creations of God, we are incredible creatures, right? Even secular people can identify that we are amazing creatures. Shakespeare, Hamlet says, you know, what a piece of work is man, how noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form and moving, how express and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god, the beauty of the world, the paragon of animals. And I would expect nothing less from the Creator of the universe. We are amazing. Psalm 8 even alludes to this fact that we are amazing creations that God made from nothing. But that there is a limit to what we can do. Now, God is the ultimate authority in the universe. No one can argue with that. He is the be-all, end-all of everything. And nobody tells God what to do. He has ultimate authority. Now, as part of the attributes that He's given us, He has given us authority in some areas. Back in Genesis, He says we are to rule the earth. We put it under subjection. And also, we are destined to rule for those who are saved and baptized in Christ. We will reign with Him. So there must be something that he put in us that is comfortable with authority and ruling, because you can't expect something to rule that doesn't have any idea what ruling is all about. So we are destined to rule, and that is in us because God, our Creator, our Father, also rules. But the problem is people take it too far. We have no authority to decide what is right and what is wrong. We have no wisdom, no experience, no power to make that decision. The only authority that we have is what he gives us to have authority over. And John tells us, Jesus himself said, you would have no authority, he's talking to Pilate, of course, no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. So we see that God is the one that gives authority and the limitations of that authority. But that doesn't give us the right to try and choose what is right and wrong. So, but everybody wants to be like God. I can't think of anything else in the universe I'd rather be. And we try, when we look at God, many people want to be like him, and we try and emulate his power, his abilities, what we see in the Bible. And what was the first thing that God is most famous for, right? What did he say? He said, let there be light, and there was light. God speaks, and things happen. That's all he has to do. And we know this, and we try and duplicate that because we want to be like God in some way. Some people, in different ways, we'll talk about, but we have what do we have? Alexa and Siri? What we command them with our voice. Siri, tell me this. You know, trying to be, you know, authoritative. We have remote controls, you know, which in my day I was the remote control, as many of you were. But we have these sit back and just push a button and things happen and we control things from across the room. And now I know you can just speak into them just using that voice. We have appliances, washers and dryers and microwaves and ovens that you could control and operate from the other side of the country just with your cell phone. We like that power. And guess what God can do? He can do anything. God can be anywhere at any time, and we try to duplicate that because with our means of transportation. It used to be, I looked this up, you can get from Boston to London, a voyage that took anywhere from 40 to 90 days in the 17th century, now in 6 hours, which is amazing. We try to duplicate God's ability. He can speak to anyone, at any time, anywhere. And we try and, through the magic of our technology, try to duplicate this power by having, you know, web conferences, especially since COVID, you know, that's really blown up. People do internet conferencing, and you can speak to somebody on the other side of the world and see them in real time. And that's amazing. And that's, everybody wants to be like God, and that is the one thing that we have in common with Satan. Except Satan wants to be like God in his power and authority. We want to be like God in his love and mercy and forgiveness and all the fruits of the Spirit. Our authority and power is not our primary objective. Being like God in his mercy and love is. And that is how we give glory to God. That is how we be obedient to God. By listening to his authority. By obeying the things that he says are right and wrong. And we are to be like God in his example of his son, Jesus Christ. Jesus came down and suffered to show us what it means to be obedient. What it means to serve. And how to serve. And how to be, to give glory to God. By what we do and what we say and how we submit to God's authority, because he is right. And we can see it in everything that we watch in history and in the Bible, how flawed, how terrible things can be, how horrible the world can get when we don't put God's wisdom first. But some people get confused in that because it is hard to be like Christ sometimes with the temptation that we face. So you look at these two cathedrals here. These are amazing cathedrals in Europe, and they are absolutely beautiful. But why do we do this? Why do we take the time and sacrifice the resources to do this? And I think one of the reasons is if you can look at this building and you can see how glorious and marvelous it is, just like the temple in Israel. You can say, well, look, this is amazing. This is glorious. If God is anywhere, He is here. This is what glory looks like. And if God is here, and this is holy, then I don't have to be as much, because I can just worship here. As long as I have this, as long as this stands, then I'm good. And I could go home to my house, and I don't have to be as holy, because there is where God is. That's holy. Just like in Jeremiah chapter 7, do not trust in these deceptive words. This is the temple of the Lord. This is the temple of the Lord. They put their faith in that building, thinking that is holy and that is glorious. Because if you go in there, and I feel at all. But that is not where God is. God is in us. We are supposed to be the reflections of His glory and His holiness in everything that we do. We imitate God by following what Jesus said, by following what Jesus did. Romans 12, therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. And that, by submitting to His will and believing and having faith that what He says is good and evil, will always stand. Now, let me see. I can get this moving here. Sometimes there we go. Alright, cool. Alright, so here is another superpower that we try and copy of God. Now, we know that God is all-powerful, and He can see any time and any place and anywhere. There's nothing impossible for God. So we, for the first time in history, are able to duplicate that power in, you know, a very minor form, because this isn't real life. We know this is just one picture after another being flashed really fast. But this is a video someone took of 1906, Market Street in San Francisco. And the reason I show you this, I think this is more has more impact than just showing a bunch of still pictures of people in the past, because you can actually see them moving around in their world, in kind of their mannerisms, how they move. You can see what's going on in their life. And we can, when these people were alive, they're all dead now, but these people were alive, they were experiencing the same temptations, the same problems, the same weaknesses that we have today. And you can see it when you watch, you know, you can think it in their minds, you know, oh, look at Mr. Jones got that fancy new automobile, and I'm stuck with this little horse and carriage. Oh, it must be nice. Oh, look, there's Carolyn. You know what I heard her doing, you know, the other day? That's not good. Or my spouse. I can't believe my spouse. Oh, I got to go home and face this problem. What about my job? I need more money. How am I going to pay the bills? I can't believe that the other person spent this kind of money. Look at this person cut me off right here in traffic. It drives me crazy. I hate that person. You know, you can feel and sense the same deep emotion, the same drama, the same problems that we all face. And this has been going on since the beginning of time. But where are those problems now? Where are those temptations? They're gone. They're all been washed away in the slow tide of time. And they're meaningless. What were they fighting about? What were they jealous of? Who did they hate? Who were they angry at? Who did they fight with? What did they covet? It's all gone. And nothing matters. The only thing that matters right now at this second is where they are right now. And those, where they are right now, is completely dependent on how they dealt with the temptations they faced in their time. And their time is over. It's gone. Whatever choices they made in their life are history, and they have to deal and live with whatever decisions they made in their life for however long they've been gone. And for some of them, it's been quite a long time. And you can see in their faces the problems that they face, and you wish you could just reach out to them and tell them, look, it's going to be over soon. Sooner than you think. Please make the right choice. You know, there's an old legend of a man who went traveling around the world several hundred years ago looking for as much wisdom as he could. And one day he came to Buddha, and he asked Buddha, he said, you know, what's the biggest mistake that humanity makes in life? And Buddha said, the biggest mistake is that you think you have time. Time is fleeting. How many of us here are already middle-aged out of the blue? How many of us here are planning for retirement when we were just playing in high school? It's gone in the blink of an eye. So our temptations of choosing what is right and wrong will be with us for eternity. And it's only those who accept God's will to believe in Him and to be baptized in His Son Jesus Christ who will have that opportunity to be in heaven. Because it won't be long before the next generation is looking back at videos of us and saying, I wonder what choices they made. So, if anyone here needs to know the right choice to make, what is good and evil in the world, and wants to believe in Jesus Christ, I invite you to step forward as we stand and sing the song of invitation.